Oh, I really appreciate you taking this time. And I wanted to ask, is there anything I forgot to ask you or that you'd like to say?
Hey, Ellen, why don't you finish with your favorite line from Merlin? Go ahead, sit up straight.
I know.
You want to do the one you did at your graduation?
Yeah. Knowledge and wisdom is the real power, boy.
Knowledge and wisdom
is the real power.
You bet. Yeah.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Owen and Ron and Roger, thank you for being here, and thank you for a magnificent exploration of a life. And thank you, Owen, for sharing your life with all of us.
You're welcome.
That's Owen Susskind and his dad, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Ron Susskind, and the Oscar-winning filmmaker Roger Ross Williams talking about their new documentary, Life Animated. It premiered here at the Sundance Film Festival. That does it for the show. If you'd like a copy, go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottes, Dina Dina Gesder, Amy Littlefield, Noreen Sheikh. Thank you to John Hamilton and Robbie Caron. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
KBOO, Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Community Acupuncture and Massage, a benefit for political prisoner Mutulu Shakur, Sunday, February the 7th, noon to 4 p.m. at 7 Star Acupuncture in Portland. Dr. Mutulu Shakur was one of the founders of the Black Acupuncture Advisory Association in North America and the Harlem Institute of Acupuncture. Incarcerated for 30 years, Mutulu and his legal team are seeking community and financial support to fight his imprisonment. A group of licensed acupuncturists and massage therapists are offering treatments to our community as a fundraiser. Again, that's of Community Acupuncture and Massage, a benefit for political prisoner Mutulu Shakur, Sunday, February the 7th, noon to 4 p.m. at 7 Star Acupuncture, 436 Southeast 12th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 33rd Real Music Film Festival running through February 8th. Thursday, January 28th, will screen Landfill Harmonic. Landfill Harmonic follows the Recycled Orchestra of Keitora, a Paraguayan musical group that plays instruments made entirely out of garbage. When their story goes viral, the orchestra is suddenly catapulted into the global spotlight. This 2014 film has been described as a testament to the transformative power of music and the resilience of the human spirit. That's January 28th at 7 p.m. at the Northwest Film Center in the Witzel Auditorium at 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information on the films and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Ammon Bundy has been jailed and is now calling for an end to his occupation.
As Planned Parenthood prepares to fight an anti-abortion ballot measure, we speak with President and CEO Stacy Cross.
And a second group of anti-climate change protesters is trying out the necessity defense, this one in Montrose, New York.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 27th, 2016. I'm Aaron J. Bernard.
And I'm Brian Pritchett. Leaders of the armed occupation at the Malheur Refuge had a standoff with the FBI yesterday, resulting in the death of one militia member. Eight people were also arrested on Tuesday, including the group's most prominent leader, Ammon Bundy. Ryan Bundy, brother of Ammon, was shot and sustained minor injuries during the confrontation. A group of militia members were driving to the nearby town of John Day when they were pulled over by the federal authorities. Initial eyewitness accounts said that one of the passengers, Lavoy Finicum, was shot and killed after charging at authorities. Finicum was a leader of the armed occupation as well as a spokesman for the group. Those members who were arrested were arraigned today in Portland and are being held at the Multnomah County Detention Center. Police have set up checkpoints along roads leading to the refuge, limiting access to local property owners only. A message from Bundy was delivered today by his lawyers asking for the remaining occupiers to leave. In the statement, Bundy said, "We need to step back. Somebody died yesterday." Despite the arrest of the armed occupation's leaders, armed militia members are still occupying the wildlife refuge. The remaining militia members have stated that they have no intent to leave and have even called for more armed militia to join them. KBOO's Paul Rowland spoke with Arun Gupta of the website Raw Story about the motivations of these armed occupiers.
Well, I think the big thing to understand is they were really trying to start a revolution. They kept talking about how we want to return to a constitutional form of government. We want to get back to the Constitution. Nearly everyone there would carry around a copy of the Constitution. They had all these pocket copies they were passing around, and I got one. But when you started to ask them what exactly did they mean by that, it wasn't just what you often hear from the right wing: oh, we need to abolish the Department of Education, we need to abolish the EPA. They wanted to abolish virtually all of the federal executive branch, but they also wanted to return all lands and powers to local control. On top of that, you know, when you would ask them, well, which government in the U.S. do you see as being constitutional? It was not. There was not a single government down at the county, municipal level, much less the state or federal level, and they wanted to just completely sweep it all away. And it was, you know, they're Mormon, and there's a lot of religious motivation mixed up in this as well. I think they really were treating, they look at the Constitution as this sacred, almost holy document, and they were on a purification mission, and it was going to start in Harney County. Because they kept saying, one of the things they kept saying, they had these different demands going in, right? It started around these two ranchers, White and Steve Hammond, who were convicted of arson on federal lands. And you have to understand about them, like, there are a lot of people here who say they got a bum deal. They were sentenced to 5 years for this arson. But there were many, many incidents before this, all sorts of illegal activities, death threats. So they would just kind of put away for something egregious that they could get them on. But nonetheless, that upset a lot of people here. And so that's why they were able to kind of find some support here. But they set up this thing called the Committee of Safety. And so when they kept saying, we want the lands to return to the people of Harney County, they weren't talking about the Harney County government. They were going to create their own new government, and it's all based on this mythologized notion of colonial America, this, like, rugged individualism and communities banding together. I mean, you know, it's very much as kind of like fire and brimstone teachers who, you know, say we need to go back to these old, like, Christian communities and, you know, get rid of all this modern apparatus and things that are distracting us. Another way I was describing it was kind of like year zero, that they wanted to restart society over, starting in that wildlife refuge in Harney County. And what happened last night is they were trying to expand. We can talk a little more about this, but I think, you know, their fatal flaw was that they were getting cocky, and two, at the same time, they were also, I think, getting a little desperate, and so they were trying to expand their campaign in various ways, take more territory, but also to set up another committee of safety, this time in neighboring Grant County, and that's when the feds sprung a trap for them. for them. I mean, it wasn't very smart on their part to have the entire leadership going there. So the Feds sprung the trap, and they captured them, and Lavoie Finicum was shot and killed, and Ryan Payne was apparently wounded superficially. And I think seven others are now in jail, and there'll probably be more arrests.
That was Arun Gupta of Raw Story speaking with KBOO's Paul Roland on Wednesday Talk Radio.
In Texas this week, a grand jury cleared a Planned Parenthood clinic on charges it had sold aborted fetuses. The panel also indicted two California anti-choice activists on charges of tampering with a governmental record. That's a second-degree felony punishable by up to 20 years in prison. Meanwhile, Oregon Right to Life is working to place an initiative on the November ballot that would ban state funding for abortions. The group last fall raised enough signatures to gain a ballot title for the measure. KBOO News spoke today with Planned Parenthood of the Columbia Willamette's president and CEO, Stacey Cross, about how the organization is responding.
Abortion rights, as you know, nationally are incredibly challenged with a variety of bills with that have happened over the last 5 years in different state legislatures. And so here in Oregon, we have, fortunately, we have no restrictions to reproductive health care right now. And we have fought really hard to keep that here in Oregon. We do know that there possibly is going to be a ballot initiative here in Oregon on public funding for abortion. We've already successfully defeated that twice, once in the 70s and once in the 80s here. So we're preparing for that if that actually makes it onto the ballot.
How are you preparing? What needs to be done?
We are just looking at what we need to do as far as messaging, and we're working with going through the proper steps as far as getting an appropriate ballot title right now.
Can you talk to us a little bit right now about what impact it would have? How would that hit us here?
Well, if you eliminated the public funding for abortion, which is state funding, we're only one of 13 states that actually has state funding available for abortion for low-income women, it's just going to make it a much greater challenge for low-income women to be able to afford an abortion procedure, and women are going to choose different steps if they can't have funding for that abortion.
Stacey, we have been fighting this fight for so many years. Can you talk a little bit about the political climate in this country that has made this issue of reproductive rights so difficult, even years later?
The challenge that we're seeing right now is just that there have been restrictions all over. The conservative right keeps winning and being successful to be able to put different restrictions. But what has happened right now because of this these videos that were used in the fall, as you know, there was a group that basically created scam videos. They used malicious, they broke the law to spread the malicious lies about Planned Parenthood in order to really advance their extreme anti-abortion political agenda. We felt the impact of those all over the country as Planned Parenthood staff and Planned Parenthood donors. And we were just so thrilled this week with the indictment in Texas. And as we know, as the dust settles and the truth comes out, it's become totally clear that the only people who were engaging in wrongdoing were the criminals behind this fraud, and we're just really glad that they're finally being held accountable.
Stacey, for people who do not know, can you talk about the full range of services that Planned Parenthood of the Columbia Willamette provides for people all over our state, I believe? Who is served and what do you do?
We provide Planned Parenthood services that are provided, and our affiliate is called Planned Parenthood Columbia Willamette, and we cover the Portland area and down to southwestern Oregon which is covered by another affiliate called Planned Parenthood Southwestern Oregon, which is around Eugene. We also cover Southwestern Washington. We cover the Vancouver area, and we provide basic reproductive health care services for women, men, and teens. We provide birth control, and prevention is our number one goal. We do more to prevent unplanned pregnancies through family planning. About 74% percent of our services are family planning or preventative services. 17% are sexually transmitted infections, and less than 6%, based on the year, are abortion services. And I think that's always a surprise for people, how much of our services are really preventative services. Planned Parenthood nationally does more than any other organization to prevent unplanned pregnancies, which impact our communities in to keep people safe and also keep people in a situation where they get to decide when they want to become parents and they make an informed decision when it's right for them.
That was KBOO's Lisa Loving speaking with Stacy Cross, president and CEO of Planned Parenthood of the Columbia Willamette.
Five people were shot in a Seattle homeless encampment that left two dead and three injured on Tuesday night around 7:15. The encampment, referred to as the Jungle, is located between Seattle and SeaTac Airport along the I-5 corridor. Police say that these attacks were very targeted and that homeless people around the area should not fear similar attacks from the same suspects. The announcement came moments after Seattle Mayor Ed Murray finished giving a speech on homelessness in the city. He later stated that we are involved in a homeless crisis the likes that we have not seen since the Great Depression. This is the worst shooting in Seattle since a 2012 incident in a cafe that left five dead.
Oregon State University is known for livestock study, but now scientists have discovered remains of animals they did not expect. Demi Hellenius has the story.
So thrilled this week with the indictment in Texas, and as we know, as the dust settles and the truth comes out, it's become totally clear that the only people who were engaging in wrongdoing were the criminals behind this fraud, and we're just really glad that they're finally being held accountable.
Stacy, for people who do not know, can you talk about the full range of services that Planned Parenthood of the Columbia Willamette provides for people all over our state, I believe? Who is served and what do you do?
We provide Planned Parenthood services that are provided, and our affiliate is called Planned Parenthood Columbia Willamette.
Sorry, that is not the audio we were looking for, but we will come back to that story in just a minute.
In the meantime,
when you think about ancient Oregon, mammoths and camels may not be what immediately pops into mind. However, construction crews at Oregon State have found bones of a mammoth and other animals while expanding the school's stadium. Construction crews digging on the northern end zone discovered the femur of a mammoth that may date back as far as 10,000 years. Associate Professor Lauren Davis says that frequently animals will journey towards water in the final days of their life, and these kinds of discoveries are not uncommon in areas that used to be bogs. Bogs tend to have very little oxygen available in their waters, and this slows or even stops decay of ancient bones. There is currently no evidence of humans, so it is likely that the animals died of natural causes, rather than early human hunting. Because there are no bones or artifacts of humans, the site is not protected federally, and construction is expected to maintain its schedule. In the meantime, students are digging up the remains in an unusually close-to-home dig site, and placing the bones in water so that the decay can be slowed down. For KBOO News, I'm Demi Hellenius.
Oregon lawmakers allocated $5 million from the state lottery to go towards forestry planting last year. From this money, $700,000 has been granted to forest collaboratives in Oregon to boost planting and resources in the coming years. This money is intended to bolster local economies. Lawmakers also hope to encourage collaboration between environmental groups, timber industries, and other interested parties to better maintain Oregon's national forests.
Former NFL football player Tyler Sash was found dead last September after an apparently accidental overdose of pain medications at his Iowa home, evidently another victim of football. Doctors at Boston University and the Concussion Legacy Foundation, who, having examined Sash's brain, announced this week that he had chronic traumatic encephalopathy, a brain disease caused by repeated blows to the head. The disease has shown up in scores of former NFL players, resulting in numerous deaths. Chronic traumatic brain damage has been occurring with increased frequency among players who have suffered repetitive concussions in contact sports and are common among football players. Sash played only two seasons with the New York Giants, during which he suffered at least five recorded concussions. He probably suffered additional impacts to the head while he was a star athlete at the University of Iowa. "My son knew something was wrong, but he couldn't express it," Barnetta Sash, Tyler's mother, said. Sash is one of the youngest players to be found with the disease. Ann McKee, a professor at the Boston University School of Medicine, said of Sash, "Even though he was only 27, he played 16 years of football, and we're finding over and over that it's the duration of exposure to football that gives you a high."
Local air quality regulators joined the list of petitioners taking legal action against the Southern California Gas Company yesterday. They allege that negligence has been the cause of the methane leak that began last October. That leak isn't expected to be contained until the end of February. The gas utility is a subsidiary of Sempra Energy, and according to data at Open Secrets, seven members of Congress are also shareholders. Between lobbying expenditures and campaign contributions, the company has spent more than $30 million influencing Washington since 1992. Dr. Astrid Caldas is the expert on climate change at the Union of Concerned Scientists. She spoke with KBOO reporter Robin Ryan about the impact the leak is having on climate change protections. She's also discussing what changes in regulatory policy might be on the way as a result.
Are you ready, Shane?
I am.
It's 8 in the morning, and Stephen Sifra is getting his son ready for school.
Bye, Dad.
Oh, goodbye, brother. Come here. Hug you.
His life is much different today than 10, 15 years ago when he was incarcerated in Pelican Bay's SHU, Security Housing Unit.
When I was in prison, I would wake up, do a morning ritual that involved, you know, rolling up my mattress, cleaning my cell, and just getting ready for the day. And then I would receive my, you know, crappy food through the tray slot, and then I would take it all apart and, you know, compartmentalize it and put it all away and decide what I'm going to eat when. And then I would go through my schedule, you know, whatever it was, you know, draw for 2 hours, exercise, bathe, lunch, read, half an hour of TV, read, bed. And that's basically what I do today. So I guess in all the ways that are superficial, it's the same. And all the ways that matter, it's different. So what matters? Well, for me, it's my family and then school. So having a family wasn't ever on my radar. When I was in prison, I didn't have anybody, like nobody. But my family has surprisingly turned out to be something that I never wanted, but has become the most important relationship that I have.
Since his last stint in prison, Stephen found a partner and now has a son. Today he views family differently than he did while incarcerated. Stephen says his family of origin never even visited. He remembers growing up in an abusive environment and now sees that as a root cause of the childhood behavioral issues which resulted in his incarceration at an early age.
Where I come from, if you're mad at somebody, you throw boiling water on them, or you punch a hole in the wall and move out for a week. I started off by ditching school and stealing money out of my mom's purse. And then I found that I could steal from other people and get more money, stores, you know, shoplift. And I never went to school unless I was made to. You know, immediately when I started coming into contact with law enforcement, it was always a matter of incarceration. From the very beginning, when I wouldn't go to school, it was like, we're going to incarcerate you. When I would steal, we're going to incarcerate you. Everything I did, we're going to incarcerate you. Looking back on it now, I can see that what we had, me being in a relationship with these authority figures, was we had a social problem. We didn't have a crime problem. And really what it was is a lack of attention on my life by a caring adult. I think we could do better, you know, as a community, as a people. You know, I'm sorry, there are no juvenile criminals. There are just, you know, failed authority structures and failed families and failed parents, you know, and a failed community.
Stephen was incarcerated in juvenile hall before he reached his teens for petty crimes. But he escalated into more severe crimes like carjacking, stealing people's cars from them with a gun. While serving a sentence at California's Prison for Youth, the California Youth Authority, or CYA, Stephen was uncooperative with authorities and put in solitary confinement. The United Nations Office of Human Rights has declared solitary confinement for youth an act of torture and calls for a ban on the practice. In response to public controversy, New York recently banned placing youth in solitary confinement. But most states and the federal government still use the practice.
The first time I was in solitary confinement was for 4 years. I was in CYA. It's because I wouldn't do my homework. They threw me in solitary confinement and they were going to make me listen. They were going to make me, you know, they're going to teach me a lesson. And you know, what is it like? Well, it's exactly like what it sounds like. They're, you know, you're in a room, you're by yourself, you're not talking to anybody. You know, there's nothing in there with you to keep you company. There's nothing to stimulate you, you know, and this is during when I'm developing, during the most important piece of my emotional and mental development. I'm in a white room by myself with a book if I'm lucky. So yeah, that's what solitary confinement's like. I did it for 8 years. I did it 4 years as a juvenile, 4 years as an adult. I was put into a closet. In those closets were cells. I was put into one of those and they put a CS-117 chemical crowd control mace canister in there with me to soften me up. And it nearly killed me. I was drowning on this stuff. I wouldn't give them my dinner tray. Yeah, it was. I didn't know at the time that they were torturing me and that was an assault, you know. So, yeah, the methods of control in California authority are unbelievable.
After he was released from juvenile detention, Stephen had little support to fall back on. He ended up with a drug addiction and breaking the law again. Now an adult, he ended up in solitary confinement in California's Pelican Bay Prison Security Housing Unit, known as the SHU.
So for me to go from there to, you know, Pelican Bay SHU, it wasn't a big hurdle. It was pretty natural progression. And it was really what I knew. And I didn't really have hope for anything else.
4 state prisons in California have SHU security housing units that are solitary confinement cells. Stephen spent time in 2 of them. He says before doing time in Pelican Bay's SHU, he first spent 2 years in Corcoran State Prison's security housing unit.
So I was a model inmate for 4 years, did everything they wanted me to do in prison, and I got in a fist fight just days before I was supposed to parole. And the next day, an officer was taunting me and I spit on him. They gave me, you know, 4 years for spitting and the fight. If you took 1.5 steps, you would be from the back of the cell to the front of the cell. At first, it wasn't too bad, the SHU, especially since I had already spent 4 years in solitary confinement in conditions much more austere as a juvenile. So I was already well disposed to being in those conditions. The psychological impacts they're more insidious and more subtle. The paranoia and the anxiety, I trace it to being in solitary confinement. Like, I was incarcerated for more than 16 years. It wasn't until I left that second solitary confinement experience that I was oriented in a way, like a tense and suspicious and paranoid. But I think that that's how it's designed that way. Your back is against the wall. And your resources have been limited to the extent that you don't have anybody else to rely on, to bounce ideas off of, or to relate to. Somebody that can say, oh, that thought you're having, that's crazy. Or, oh yeah, I had those thoughts too, things like that. You don't have any of that. You know, there's none of that human connection.
Stephen says it was human connection, something he was denied much of his life, that ultimately helped him turn his life around. Outside of prison, at a party, he met someone he felt a connection with.
I was 30 years old. One guy took an interest in me and said, hey, I see something in you. You might be able to do something different. And it was like the clouds parted, like everything changed. you know. And sure, it was after a lifetime of learning and figuring out, oh, I really don't like prison after all, and I'm seeing other people that are kind of like me, you know, drug addicts that are in recovery and, you know, finding new lives.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for news from the BOO. This will be followed by The Underground at 6, followed by Hard Knock Radio at 7 p.m., news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather is rainy with highs near 55 degrees. Today in history, in 1888, the National Geographic Society was founded in Washington, D.C. for, quote, the increase and diffusion of geographical knowledge. The quote of the day is from Bruce Lee. He said, adapt what is useful, reject what is useless, and add what is specifically your own.
It is 5:29, fingers crossed. Time now for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Well, I did not expect this. The National Republican Party has published an official policy document showing that the GOP really might be more than a gaggle of serve-the-rich plutocrats and wacky, trumped-up right-wingers. Just when you thought the party was consuming itself in the know-nothingism of its presidential pretenders and the recalcitrant do-nothingism of its Congress critters, out comes a sign of sanity. In this 18-page manifesto, the party proclaims that, quote, our government was created by the people for all the people, and it must serve no less a purpose. All the people. Forget pontifications by Wall Street billionaires dividing America into virtuous creators, like themselves, and worthless moochers, like you and me. This document abounds with commitments to the common good. Quote, America does not prosper, it proudly proclaims on page 3, unless all Americans prosper. Wow, that's downright democratic. And how's this for a complete turnaround? Labor is the United States. The men and women who, with their minds, their hearts, and hands, create the wealth that is shared in this country, they are America. Holy Koch brothers, share the wealth? Yes, and how about this? The protection of the right of workers to organize into unions and to bargain collectively is the firm and permanent policy of the Republican Party. Eat your heart out, Scott Walker, and you other labor-bashing GOP governors. The document also supports our public postal service, the United Nations, equal rights for women, expanding our national parks, vigorous enforcement of antitrust laws, and raising the minimum wage. New enlightenment in the grand old party. Hallelujah! This is Jim Hightower saying, can all this be true? Believe it or not, yes it is, except it's not new. This document is the Republican Party platform of 1956.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Another town has found unsafe levels of lead in their tap water. A small town near Cleveland, Ohio, closed its schools for 3 days and issued a warning to residents alerting them of high levels of lead and copper in the water. Like in Flint, Michigan, bottled water is being handed out to the residents of Sebring as children and pregnant women are being told not to drink city water. Unsafe lead levels were first detected in the town's water last summer, leading many residents to wonder why a warning was not issued sooner. State regulators are asking for a criminal investigation into the town's plant manager, James Bates. The Ohio Environmental Protection Agency issued an emergency order on Monday to Bates, barring him from working at the town's water treatment plant. Bates' failure to issue a warning to the town's residents about the lead levels has resulted in the Ohio EPA saying that it will revoke his operating license. Sebring residents expressed frustration over the lack of warning and transparency at a town council meeting on Monday. Residents demanded to know why a warning was not issued sooner, despite a law requiring residents to be warned within 60 days of detection. Lead testing kits have been sent to Sebring, where testing at elementary schools is expected to take place soon.
We present you now with a piece from Jared Dantzler and Kim Frazchek from the Montrose Nine. The Montrose Nine is one of the groups of activists facing criminal charges for putting a stop to the Spectra Energy Algonquin pipeline from being built in New York.
This is Jared Dantzler, KBOO News. I'm here speaking with Kim Frazchek, one of the activists involved in the Montrose Nine. Welcome, Kim, to KBOO.
Thank you.
So, Kim, how did you come to be involved in this action?
Well, I've been sort of fighting Spectra Energy since 2011, 2012, when they were building part of this exact same expansion into New York City with their New Jersey, New York expansion project. We formed a really nice coalition of people. And so we lost that battle, unfortunately. We had a lot of powers working against us, but we learned a lot from the movement. We learned a lot about FERC. We learned a lot about Spectra Energy. And we learned about how it's connected to the larger infrastructure plan of Spectra Energy going through the Northeast. At this point, we have exhausted our administrative remedies, and we now believe that nonviolent civil disobedience is the way that we're going to have to work here.
So take us to that November morning when you blocked the entrance to Spectra Energy's parking lot. Describe to us, take us there that morning and what happened.
We knew exactly, you know, where we were going to go, what exactly we were going to do. And it was we were going to block the ware yard where Spectra Energy deploys its employees to go out to cut down trees and to trench the land and, you know, build the pipeline. So we were preventing work for Spectra Energy from happening that day. And I think that not only were we successful in stopping it for a short amount of time, but what we were really doing was escalating the case for people to actually pay attention to. So, you know, our action was twofold. Our action was to, you know, block the entrance and create, you know, a heightened awareness of our activism, but essentially also to create the story, because we need the story to be told.
This on the eve of New York's banning of fracking natural gas in the state of New York, yet the Algonquin pipeline is set to run natural gas from the shale in Pennsylvania through to upper New England. Can you talk about how this affects your immediate community and some of the concerns of local residents? But one of the major issues highlighted in this case and that will be brought up in court is the proximity of the pipeline to Indian Point nuclear facility.
Yes. The pipeline is running 105 feet away from critical infrastructure at Indian Point Nuclear Facility. This facility is also an aging nuclear power plant that has been is operating without licenses. And, you know, it's a danger. There was a fire there recently, and we know that the history of, you know, nuclear meltdowns and when things go wrong at nuclear power plants, how large of an impact radius it actually is. That would wipe out the entire metropolitan area of New York City. So we're not only talking about all wildlife, all people, you know, all of our lives here that is at stake, but we're actually talking about the future of the economic, you know, implications for the global economy. We're talking about the fact that 20 million people will be displaced if worst case scenario actually happens. You know, so that is all of New York City, all five boroughs, and also, you know, New Jersey, Connecticut. You know, it's a big group of people that are at risk if this pipeline, you know, if something does happen to this pipeline next to the Indian Point power plant.
So the nine of you are charged currently with disorderly conduct, and it sounds like your hope is to elevate the case to testify to the court to appeal to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And what is your hope moving forward with this trial?
Our hope moving forward is that we can halt this pipeline, that the appropriate agencies will have to stop the construction and do an independent risk assessment of the fact that, you know, it's running so close to the nuclear power plant. So I live in New York City, and in the last 2 years, we've seen gigantic pipelines exploding that are only 10 inches, that are the old pipelines, taking out city blocks and displacing hundreds of people and killing people. And, you know, this is all too real for us when we see this actually happening. And we know that the impact of a pipeline 3 to 4 times the size of those next to a power plant run on nuclear fuel is not acceptable for how we should be functioning as a society. We should really be paying attention to the fact that we have the technology to build our future on solar power, wind power. We can work with the natural systems that the Earth and the sun provide for us. So there's no reason that we should be staying in the fossil age. And the entire reason why it's so hard for us to get out of that is because the oil industry, the oil and gas industry, is such a monopoly over our lives that it's going to be a big struggle to get out. But we're definitely dedicated to helping humanity dig out of their own problems.
I've been speaking with Kim Fratchek, environmental activist, one of the Montrose Nine, arrested in New York State for blocking an entryway into Spectra Energy and stopping work on the Algonquin pipeline set to run natural gas through New York State. Kim, thank you so much for joining us on KBOO.
Thank you for inviting me.
For KBOO News, I'm Jared Dantzler.
300 dead sea turtles have been found on the coast of India. The Olive Ridley sea turtles are considered to be a vulnerable species and were making their way to their annual nesting site on an important stretch of Indian coast. This could have a major effect on the turtles' population in the coming years. Illegal trawlers are suspected to be the cause of the mass death. Trawling is banned in this area from the months of November to May during nesting times. Investigations are still underway and the exact cause is yet to be declared.
Computers are beating humans at the board game Go. A computer has beat a person at the extremely complicated game 10 years sooner than anyone expected. Google's DeepMind system is able to play the complex game by observing the board and predicting the likely course the game will take, much the same way an advanced human player would. Using this method, DeepMind was able to predict what move an expert player would make next 57% of the time. However, as impressive as this feat is, DeepMind has only defeated the European champion. The team behind DeepMind has set their sights on challenging the reigning world champion, Lee Soldé.
Users of Apple's Safari browser were frustrated this morning when the browser crashed for many users. The Safari browser is the standard for Mac computers and iPhones alike. Users whose systems synced in the morning hours suffered from a bug that caused their browsers to begin crashing. While the problem only lasted the morning, it was a big deal for users, as iPhones make up the majority of cell phones in the U.S. and Macs are popular for graphic design. Safari enjoyed a unique status for years as a virus-proof browser. However, new spyware and adware, along with occasional bugs, have users reevaluating their browser choice. Apple has said that they fixed the crash and all Safari browsers should now be working.
The Bulletin of the Atomic Scientist has decided to keep the hands on their symbolic doomsday clock on 3 minutes to midnight this year. The minute hand will not be moved backwards despite such advances as last year's historic nuclear deal with Iran and climate agreements in Paris. The bulletin claims that while the Iran deal is a definite sign of progress, that progress is being impeded by high tensions between the world's remaining nuclear powers. This is the closest to midnight the clock has been since the height of the Cold War. The farthest away it has ever been is 17 minutes from midnight, where it was set just after the Cold War ended.
This weekend, Iran announced plans to order 160 airplanes from the European company Airbus. The move spurred Canada to reconsider their business relations with the country. While Canada says that they remain skeptical of Iran, they also believe that they are hurting their own economy. Canada is home to airplane manufacturer Bombardier, and the new business relations could help to stir up business for the manufacturer. While Canada did not give a time frame for making changes to the sanctions, a deal with Iran could affect thousands of jobs and generate millions in revenue. Ever since Iran was found to be in compliance with international demands to dismantle its nuclear program, the United States and Europe have been rushing in to fill the new markets.
We'll be right back.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Jenna Yokoyama, Connor Flynn, Martin Dodge, Robin Ryan, Joe Aaron, and Grace Ann Smith. Our producer is Lisa Loving. Our engineer is Ian Westmoreland. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews, or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. If you would like to call your elected representatives about any issue you've heard about on the news tonight, here are their numbers, so grab something to write with. The local number for Senator Ron Wyden is 503-326-7525. The number for Senator Jeff Merkley is 503-326-3386. Oregon Governor Kate Brown's number is 503-378-3111. And Portland Mayor Charlie Hales can be reached at 503-823-4120. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, on K282BH Philomath at 104.3 FM, and K220HR in Hood River at 91.9 FM. I'm Brian Pritchett.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, Joanne Hardesty hosts Voices from the Edge, talk radio from a grassroots perspective. At 9, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on Between the Covers, Jane Smiley discusses her trilogy of Some Luck, Early Warning, and Golden Age. And at 11:30 on the film show, Jen Chavez sits down with local documentarian Kelly Ken to talk about her new film, Yeah, Maybe No, an exploration of sexual consent and coercion. SW Concert previews the Portland International Film Festival's Oregon Shorts program, and Ian Sundahl talks about the Hollywood Theater's monthly repressed cinema series. Thanks for listening to KBOO, your community radio station. And thanks, members, for your support. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Stay tuned. News from the Boo is next.